meeting together at 6 p.m. Call to order. Start down your ends.
Stu Martinez present.
Don Greiner present.
Karen Ward here. Connie Brace present.
Let's have the pledge and Gary, let's lead that.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, we're not to be in a hurry. We have lots of time, I guess. added agenda items?
No added agenda items today, Mr. Mayor.
Great. Consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve that, or has everybody looked at it okay?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent.
Hold on. There's a correction to one of the sets of minutes from the 15th. It's from the 22nd. Sorry.
First session.
It says that we wanted all three landscape architects to come down for presentations, and there was actually only two. So I'm going to correct that. Thank you.
All right. Anything else? Okay, do we have
so one? Approved with the correction, I'm assuming. Okay.
Second.
All approved, say aye.
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 Opposed? Passed. Unanimous. Public comments. Any public comments out there? Anybody has anything to say? Nothing? Okay, moving along. Well, this is the exciting part. Presentation by Housing Works on annual housing indicators and upcoming projects. We're all excited about this.
Good evening. So I've got our annual report to share with you, the slides from this presentation that you can have to keep.
Okay.
For the record, public.
Sure. So my name is Tom Kemper. I'm executive director of Housing Works.
And I'm Michael Hinton. I'm on the board of commissioners and the chair of Housing Works.
And just your chair, so you can do whatever.
Yeah. Okay. All perfect. Right. Can we dim those two? Probably that'd be.
Is that dark?
No, that's fine. That's great. Thank you very much. So, thank you, Mr. Mayor and councilors, for making time for us tonight. So, we wanted to give you our annual update for Housing Works and this work. So, it's 40 years that Housing Works has been around. We were originally formed as the Central Oregon Regional Housing Authority in August of 1977. So it's our 40th birthday in August. It's pretty amazing, actually. It's been that long. So we're a public corporation organized under ORS Chapter 456. And then it was originally just Deschutes in Jefferson County, and then Crook County joined in 2001. And then we rebranded as Housing Works to get away from, you know, this notion that we were this, you know, federal, you know, arm or something like that. So we wanted, you know, a name that was sort of generic to what we really do, which is fostering dignity through housing, and that's really our mission. And we do everything from single family homes to multifamily. We have the Housing Choice Voucher Program and a pretty vibrant resident service program. So these are our service territories are the three counties, and obviously Deschutes is the 800-pound gorilla representing like 80% of our population. So we have a lot of units in Deschutes County. This is our board. So each of the three counties appoints three commissioners to my board. And then we have a resident services, or we have a resident commissioner who's actually a client of our Housing Choice Voucher Program. And so we have a board of 10. Michael obviously is the chair. Dave Tarbett, the police chief, is another of the Deschutes County commissioners. And then Dennis Paulish is the third Deschutes County Commissioner. So it's a great board. So there's sort of four key things that we try to do. One is create housing opportunities, and you know, given the kind of the crisis that Central Oregon is experiencing right now, that's obviously a real focus for us right now. And then sort of focusing on helping to create thriving communities, and that's connecting individuals with resources, and we'll talk about that a little more later. And then obviously demonstrating sound and professional stewardship of all of our assets. And then the fourth one was added about 4 years ago, and it's really to just get after, you know, advocating for affordable housing in Central Oregon. They wanted us to take a strong effort in sort of pushing, you know, in all the public venues for that. So we have four basic core programs. The Housing Choice Voucher Program is essentially a contract with HUD, the federal agency, and so we're serving about 1,200 households throughout Central Oregon, and so every year we provide over $7 million in rental assistance to landlords. So it's pretty significant. And that, you know, under the voucher program, you know, the resident pays 30% of their income, and then we pick up the balance, and that's the rental subsidy side of that. And then the second area is real estate development, and we have a fairly active real estate development activity. We have currently 9 special limited liability companies, and so for every one of our projects, we form a limited liability company, and it's usually financed with low-income housing tax credits, and so we have an institutional partner that comes in and buys the tax credits, and they're our partner for 15 years, and so you have these special purpose entities for each of those projects. We have currently 3 projects under construction and 3 more that we're hoping to start in the next 10 months. And then portfolio management. So we have almost 800 units of housing throughout Central Oregon. And if you open the annual report, right in the middle, there's kind of a map that'll show you some of our projects, properties that we have. And then the fourth area is resident services. And the idea is that we've actually created a nonprofit corporation to help fund resident services, both for our voucher clients and for the residents of our properties, you know, because we serve almost like 4,000 people every year. Well, so that's, go ahead, Michael.
I do like to chime in on this slide as representing the board. Many years ago, Housing Works, we were actually CORA at the time, realized that if we lived and died on that Housing Choice Voucher Program, we're probably going to die at some point. And basically many housing authorities really view themselves as a franchise of HUD, which I don't know anybody would want to be a franchise of HUD, but that's kind of the way they live, eat, and breathe, is they're kind of a arm of the federal government down at the local level. And we made a choice many years ago that, you know, that funding, it comes and it goes, and it really doesn't sustain us as an organization. And we made a concerted effort on that real estate development bubble there, that that's where we need to focus our energy. Not only does it bring units to the area, but it brings economic stability to the organization. And it's probably, I don't know how many years ago, but we finally had kind of made that slow transition where we had enough units and enough developments that theoretically we're a self-sustaining organization through those developments. And so, right. And that really defines what the organization, you know, how the organization thinks, and the culture is we're just not a federal agency. We're an active developer with, a entrepreneurial type mindset to go out and find solutions for housing in the area. So that's,
and so we
always like to point that out because I think that's significant when you've got a kind of a semi-government agency that has put the hard work in over the last 40 years to get to that point financially is significant. It's a testament to our staff and really community at large, because all those developments, for the most part, happen through partnerships through cities and the county, and you know, we don't do it by ourselves. So, go ahead.
So, what I forgot to talk about too was Epic Property Management. So we had, you know, we struggled using, you know, third-party management companies for years, and they never really, you know, they didn't serve our interests. We always felt like they were serving their interests, and they didn't put our residents really high on their list. So we ended up actually forming our own management company in 2011, and so now they're managing all of our properties, and it's a pretty significant portfolio. So, but within a year and a half, we're going to have over 1,000 units. So I mean, it's pretty amazing, and they manage all those units, and so it's really it's a really great company. And we actually were able about 6 months ago where we hired away the director of portfolio management from the Housing Authority in Portland to run that company. So it was a real coup, and he is an amazing guy, and so we're really happy. And he will take Epic to a whole new level, and so we're really excited about that. So to get into some sort of statistics on La Pine. So what this does is break out household income, you know, less than 10,000, between 10 and 25,000. But what's significant really is that 40% of the households in La Pine make less than 25,000. You know, that's pretty significant. So that, you know, median income for the Deschutes for a family of four is just under 60,000. So, you know, that's a pretty significant statistic. Now this compares the city of La Pine versus Deschutes County. So it breaks them out between like 30% AMI is the red, and then 27% is that 30 to 60% area median income. And then above 60 to 100% of area median income is 20% of the households, and then 23% of the households make over that $60,000 number. And you compare it to Deschutes. Well, obviously Deschutes has a significantly more affluent community. So that's a pretty compelling statistic about the need. You know, and it's really one of the drivers for us to get down here and get some housing built down here that would be affordable to families who make less than very median income. So, you know, to back up a minute. So, you know, the test for what's affordable in terms of a rent is generally, it's whether you spend more than 30% of your income for household expense, you know, rent and utilities. And, you know, so for someone just making minimum wage, you know, making a little over $19,000, that 30% number would only be $481. You know, and rents are significantly more than that in La Pine and Deschutes County, for sure. And 40% of the La Pine households make less than $25,000. So, you know, that you know, there really is a strong need for affordable housing. Now this graph breaks out the percent of households that are actually paying more than 30%, more than 50% of their income for rent. So 25% of the households in La Pine pay more than half of their rent, or pay more than half of their income for rent. You know, that's a lot of people. And another 37% pay more than 30% of their income. So both of those households are deemed rent burden. And if you think about it, so that's 62% of the households in La Pine are rent burden. So they're paying more than 30% of their income for households, to maintain a household. So that's pretty significant. So it's really important that we get down and get some housing built down here. So this graph is a little detailed, and I got to kind of take you through it a little bit by bit. So the group of numbers in the upper left are the number of affordable units that are dedicated for households that make less than 60% of area median income. So it breaks it out by city. So that's the number of units that are sort of dedicated to those populations. The set of numbers under that is the actual number of households that make 60% or less of area median income. So that graph is sort of misleading in a sense, because what it's really saying is that for Ben Redmond Sisters Lapine Primeville, there's maybe one affordable unit of housing for every, you know, eight households that meet that income requirement. So, you know, we're so far behind in providing affordable housing for those people that, you know, make less than 60% of their median income. We have a challenge. So this gives you the upper right chart is sort of those same numbers on a pie chart spread, you know, sort of percentage wise. So Lapine has basically 2% of the 60% area median households in Central Oregon. And then that lower pie chart on the graph down below is where our units are located. And the sad part is that right now we don't have any affordable units in Lapine, and we're going to fix that in the next year. So, with the Lapine townhome deal. We just have a lot of work to do. This gives you a break between how many households are owners versus renters. Now, 48% of the households are owners in Lapine, and I think on a national basis, I think that the ownership level is like 62%. So we're behind, and we really need to do something about that. And then this gives you a sense of what the housing stock actually exists. So 73% of the housing stock in Lapine are single family. And then 17% are, you know, manufactured or mobile homes. And then there's only 10% of the units are sort of multifamily type units. And I think that 73% is pretty consistent across Central Oregon. And in fact, I think the mobile home percentage in Madras was like 22%. So Lapine's not that out of whack. But I think that in the other communities, there is more multifamily housing than Lapine. And this is sort of that same graph for renter-occupied housing units. So obviously, most of the housing is single family or mobile home, and the 52 units of 20 or more, that's Little Deschutes Lodge. So that's the senior housing at the north end of town. So otherwise, there really isn't any multifamily housing in Lapine. So this graph shows you how many participants there are in the Housing Choice Voucher program in Lapine. So we serve 70 households they make up about 154 people. And 64% of those voucher holders are elderly or disabled. So, you know, that's a really vulnerable population, and it's really important that we support them with vouchers, because they really don't have the ability to improve their lives, really. I mean, if they're aged or have a disability. It's significant that two-thirds of our vouchers go to that population. And then the average household size is 2.3 persons per household. And then this shows you, remember the tenant pays 30% of their income, and then the housing voucher pays the balance of the income. So on average, the tenant is paying like $235 towards their rent, and then the housing authority is picking up the balance of $506. And then the average annual income of voucher households in La Pine is almost $14,000. And I think that I want to say that that's a couple of thousand more than Madras. But every month, HousingWorks is paying almost $34,000 in housing assistance payments to landlords in La Pine. So that's a lot of money every month to landlords in La Pine. So this is obviously the exciting part, is we're building 42 units up by right next to Deschutes, Little Deschutes Lodge, the Weimar up there. So that's the site. And this, the county has really been very generous, and they're actually donating the land to us to build on it. And it really makes the deal affordable. And covers a significant part of the gap for doing the deal. And then this is sort of the preliminary layout for those units. Now, what does this have a pointer there?
It does on the top button.
The green line.
Let's see. Here is it. Well, actually, I'll just talk about it. So the most of the units are all townhomes. So they're all 2 and 3 bedroom townhome units. So it'll be really a phenomenal property for young families. I mean, with kids. I mean, that's such a great unit type, because you don't have people over you or under you, and you can put the kids to bed upstairs and kind of have a life for a few hours before you go to bed when you're a parent. And then on the building on the left. It's going to actually have 4 one-bedroom units in it, but the rest of them are all townhomes. And then we'll have that other sort of single rectangle by the two-unit and the three-unit is going to be a community building, with a rental office and a community room facility. So, I mean, it'll really be an amazing property. And then this is what they're going to look like. It's a really great design. I mean, it looks very much, like it's just part of the neighborhood, with differing colors and the architecture breaks it up really well. I think it'll be a really great addition for La Pine. We're really excited to do this. We're building these units right now in Bend, right next to Ellsworth School. So if you're ever by there recently, cruise by there, because we actually have some buildings that are completed. The shells are completed. There's paint on them. So,
what school did you say?
Ellsworth.
Oh, Ellsworth.
Yeah, just northeast of Pilot View. Yeah, near the hospital. Yeah. So that, I mean, if you want to see what we're building, that's what we're going to build. So it's really exciting. So that's what I have for you. So. Do you have questions?
I think we probably have a lot of questions. Connie, you want to start off with whatever you want?
Sure. I'm curious what your definition of La Pine was, what you used for. Was it the city limits?
I think it was the city limits.
The zip code? Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Just kind of curious.
Yeah. And those, the stats are a little goofy, because the problem is what happens is you base them on the census, which was 2010, right? And then the American Community Survey does sort of a survey to update them. So you don't have hard data that, as you would in a census year. So we'll have much better numbers in 3 years. But those are 2015 numbers based on the American Community Survey. So
yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. It's definitely needed, for sure.
Well,
you look at the numbers and you go, wow, you know, I mean, we got to get something done down here for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we're very excited to be able to do that.
Little lines on your little map here. Does that mean parking in front of the units?
Yes.
And how many parking spaces does each unit have?
Are we parked like, I think we're parked close to 2-to-1.
I think it's 2-to-1. I think it's 2 parking per unit.
Yeah, Tammy.
We haven't reviewed it yet, but that's I think what the code outlines is 2 units or 2 parking spots per residence.
Yeah, Tammy's holding our feet to the fire on that one.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That's it. I got a bunch of questions, so I'll let Council go first. So, Don, you have anything?
Blank on the right hand side on the inner, that's sort of what's that unit?
Yes. This guy? That's right. The community building.
Pardon?
That's the community building.
Okay.
So we'll have leasing office and a big community room.
I understand. And then the other big unit between the two is common area, right?
Yeah, that big green space here.
Yeah, right there. That's all common area.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be a courtyard. And then, you know, grass.
Then the next thing is when will you start taking applications, and how does somebody put an application in if they want to stay in that building?
Okay, so we're slower out of the box than we want to be. So we're probably not going to start construction until January or February of next year. We were hoping to get it going this summer, but we're just between the partition and the site plan approval. We're not going to be able to start until late fall, and so we're thinking that we should wait, because, you know, if we have a winter like the winter we just had, there's no way, you know, we'd start and we'd have to stop for a couple months, you know, because
that's a crushing blow.
Yeah, you just can't pour concrete, and you got to have your pads in to go. So we'll probably start next January, February. It's probably an 8-9 month construction start or completion. So we will complete in the, you know, probably mid-fall of 2018. Now, we'll start taking applications 3 months before that. Okay. And the way we've been doing it is because the demand is so crazy, we took applications for 4.5 days for the project by Ensworth School. It's 59 units. Well, we had, I think, over 300 applications in 4.5 days. And so what we're going to do is we're going to do a lottery. And you know, because it's really the only fair way to do it, because otherwise you'd have people camping there for days, you know. And so that's how we're going to handle it. So we'll have, and I would think that we would do the same thing here. So we'll take applications about 3 months before we'll bring it on, and then we'll do a lottery. And then, you know, you just, it's how you come out on that chart to whether you get a unit or not, so. You do have to income qualify, obviously.
I understand that.
Yeah, so
certain qualifications will be stated. And
yes.
Go ahead
yeah.
And make an application.
So, and to kind of give you a sense, so for a family of four, you know, if you have income of less than $35,000, $36,000, you'd qualify to live, you know, in a unit. So, and they'll be great homes. They'll be great.
I think all on the council are looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Definitely, I think Don asked some of the questions that I had, and so did Connie, where your information came from, because a lot of that information in the past has been pretty flawed.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to get really good numbers.
Especially when 97739.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, it's mixed in with 07.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that we have that problem all the time.
Right.
But I know I've seen your presentation from 10 years ago, when I think you first started to come down here.
Uh-huh.
And if it wasn't needed then, it definitely is needed now. And so I'm excited to see this. And if I remember correctly, managing it is done by?
By our property management company,
okay.
Epic Property Management.
Okay.
Yeah, so and they're very good. And the good thing about them was, you know, one of the most striking things that I found out using a third party company was, is so one of our projects, we actually have
you know, a Boys and Girls Club that serves like 50 kids. And we were able to do that because we bought the property across the street from one we already owned, so we ended up with sort of two big community buildings. And so we ran both properties out of one community building, and so we were left with this you know, this building. And, you know, what a great opportunity to put a Boys and Girls Club in there. Well, this property, I found out that this property management company told their leasing people not to mention anything about the Boys and Girls Club. You know, I mean, it was verboten. You know, and I'm like, you know, I'm a single parent, you know, and doesn't make a lot of money, and there's this after school program, you know, that comes as part of the deal. That's not a marketing thing, you know, for a resident there. I mean, I was like, my Lord, you know, I mean, so, I mean, it was like, and they're not focused at all on helping our residents with our resident service programs that we have. So, you know, we just figured, you know, we need to have our own company to manage it, you know, who's putting the residents' interests, you know, high on the list of priorities. So it's really worked out really well for us. Plus, we get better performance, you know, because they're managing for us, not for themselves. You know, they're more interested in doing good for us and our residents, not, you know, making a big management fee. So, I mean, it's worked out very well for us. So,
it'll work out well here.
Oh, I think so. I think so. And with 42 units, that should be enough critical mass to make it work pretty well. So.
Okay, out of all these units, are a percentage of handicapped ones?
All the units actually will be handicap adaptable. I think we have to do two units that are actually handicap ready. So I think two of the those one bedroom units on the ground floors will actually be handicap ready.
Okay. Good. Every person pay a different price according to their income?
No, there's a flat rent.
There's a flat rent.
Yeah, and it's based on that 30% right. of area median. It does depend on their bedroom size. So two bedroom rent's obviously less than a three bedroom.
And you don't know what they're going to be?
Well, let's see. I'll give you an estimate.
These are only questions that's coming from the public.
Sure. Let me give you the, I should know this off the top of my head, but we have a bunch of projects going, so I don't want to misquote.
Of course, everybody's down here excited to get in there, also.
Well, yeah, I would think so. So 59.7 times 0.6 divided by 12, I did something wrong. Times 0.6 times 0.3 divided by 12. So the three bedroom rent will be around $800.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then the twos will be less, so probably be 700-ish.
Okay, and so, well, if anybody has any hardcore questions, we can just have them call your office?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, and this is definitely a goal. We aren't going to be disappointed in any way whatsoever.
No, the only glitch that we currently have right now is that there's the specter of a significant corporate tax rate change. And what that's done is it's driven pricing down on tax credits. So we've ended up with the $380,000-$400,000 gap in sort of what we think it's going to take to get the deal done. And we're negotiating with OHS about how much they're going to put in to cover that gap.
So this is 99%. Go.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So we have the LIFT funding. We have the tax credits, we have the land. I mean, we got the land for free from the county. Right. So I mean, that's you know 95% of the financing. So we're, you know, and frankly, I'll tell you this if you promise not to tell anybody from OHCS, but we're prepared to move forward and put the money in if we have to. Yeah. But you know, we want them to put up at least 300 of that. So
I was gonna say, it's a big number, but it's not an insurmountable number to get it first.
So disappointing. Yeah. We're going to have to wait till January to start.
Well, no, and that's and that's hard for us because we wanted to be gone by summer. Yeah. But it's probably better that we're going to wait a few months because I think this corporate tax thing is going to settle out. I mean, you know, Congress is going to pass a tax reform bill, in the next 6 months, and then we'll know what the deal is, and then people will come back into the market, the corporate players, because they'll actually know what the corporate tax rates are. So that's a big deal. So it actually helps us a little bit because pricing has really dropped. I mean, with the last deal we did, we were doing credits at $1.08, and it dropped at least 20 cents. So that's pretty significant, where you lose 20% of your equity. So, but we're by hook or by crook, we're going to get it going. Okay. And we have bulk of the money lined up. So,
you can tell you that the board's been on staff for years to develop in Lapine, and for years it was they're not incorporated. We don't, our bylaws prevented that. Then obviously you're incorporated now, so it's like we've kind of been, when are we going to be in Lapine? When are we going to be in Lapine? So
it's
something else that came up when I was thinking about it. Do you run all your maintenance, like your snow removal and things like that?
We contract that mostly.
Although
it's usually a shared deal because, here's a really good example. So the new GM that we just hired 6 months ago, he was out shoveling with the rest of the maintenance guys.
Well, I know there were some issues at some of the apartment buildings.
Oh, yeah.
I just was wondering if it's, low contracted out, they're used to those kind of issues, or if it's been contracted out, or
snow removal is really a weird thing because you're responsible for anything that happens, pretty much relating to, having snow on your property or ice. But if you sign up with a company who takes on the responsibility of plowing your lots and all that stuff, that burden shifts to him. So we sign up contracts. You're still out shoveling sidewalks and stuff like that. So, it's part of the deal. And our maintenance guys do it. And we had to hire, with so much snow, and we have a couple projects with flat roofs, we had to hire a bunch of people to come and just shovel snow off the roofs.
Because there was so much. How you handle the maintenance?
Yeah.
It's
been hard because so many of the maintenance guys were able to get construction jobs now. So, it's been hard keeping our maintenance staffs fully staffed. So that's why our GM was out actually shoveling snow. But it also shows his character too. I mean, he was out there with them. So yeah, that's good.
Hey, Don, you got
something? I forgot one thing. We find in this town that people that have garages fill them with stuff, and they set their car outside of the driveway, and we notice there's no garages there. So are they going to have a place to put their stuff when they move in?
They're storage units that they'll have. They're not giant, but they're probably, I think, like 3x5, 3x4 or something like that. It's a closet outside that,
You're telling me is whoever moves in can't have much stuff.
Or they're gonna have to rent a storage unit somewhere else.
That's the question I have. Thank you.
May I do have a question.
Yeah.
Tom, I'm just curious, do you have any idea or feeling for what percentage of the applicants might be from Lapine and living in Lapine now versus being attracted to the area due to the project? That's a big question and probably difficult to even have an answer for.
Our problem is we've actually had cities say, well, we want you to screen for our residents, you know, and put give them a preference. We can't do that under fair housing. So we don't really know, but I do expect a lot of people that work in Sun River to make application here. So, but you know, it'll be a lottery, so who knows?
Yeah.
You gotta win a lottery.
I just was gonna ask about if there were any risks of losing the LIT funding, but it sounds like you've assured us that although there's a delay in the land use process and breaking ground and ultimately finalizing the project, the funding is secure.
So oh, very secure.
That's,
oh, no,
that's
they're,
good to know.
OHCS is very focused because they want another tranche of that money. So it, them getting the money out is really important for them.
Okay.
So.
Great. Well, you know where to find Tammy and I when you're ready to have those meetings. So
yeah.
Oh, tomorrow, if you want.
I think we'll be in front of you like within the next 4 weeks.
Great.
So,
well,
yeah.
Great.
So.
Well, and I just want to say, I mean, a couple of us went up and toured your spot up there. Corey did. I think Karen did. So the rest of the council that haven't been, they're welcome to go up and look at them.
Oh, yeah. And actually, the best thing to do is, if you want to call me, we'll arrange a tour of Moonlight or Daggett, which is the projects by Ensworth, which is what those are going to be. And you'll actually see what the units are going
to
be like.
Well, and I just like to tell the people that are out here, they're gorgeous.
They're nice.
Yeah. They're nice.
They're very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're known for providing really high quality homes. So it's good.
Okay. Anything else, anybody? Anything at all? We just can't tell you how much we appreciate you.
Well, thank you for making time for us.
It's good to be here.
And for your support.
It's been a long time
too.
Coming.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it was pretty easy getting through that. I mean, remember, we had that zone change and the comp plan map change. That was done.
Yeah.
You know, we were all going like this. So thank you for your support.
And Corey and Tammy work on it. And,
uh-huh.
You know, and we're anxious to see what your final project's going to look like there.
Yeah. You'll like it.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah, you will.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for having us down.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay, now we're going to have another presentation on landscape architecture on the Fine City Hall Monument and Sign. So,
let's invite Brian Newman up. While we're transitioning, Ashley's going to pull up a couple PDFs, and I'll say just a little bit of background before we turn it over to Brian to make his proposal/presentation. So, in the city's budget and for years, it's been talked about that a kind of signature monument sign gateway feature here on the Lapine City Hall property would be built. And that needs to be designed. There needs to be a process to go through for that. And then obviously there needs to be funds to build the project itself. And we have funds aside for both those steps. So staff solicited some proposals, and staff shared those proposals with the City Council at a work session last month. City Council wanted two of those folks to come down and talk a little bit more through their proposal. And so I'm going to turn it over to Brian and let him share some information, and then he'll take some questions from council afterwards.
Just give your name and your company for the record.
You bet. Brian Nearman with Zappo Landscape Architecture. I want to thank you all for inviting me down to give a brief presentation. Corey had first kind of mentioned this project, and we were down here talking with him a little bit about it. We got really excited about the potential for the catalyst that we envisioned, Mike and I, and our company envisioned. The catalyst it could be for some of the design guidelines and future implementations of some of the projects envisioned for Lapine. And although this may be a relatively small sort of introductory moment into the city, it could lead towards a larger visioning of improvements and projects for the city. So that's kind of where our office got excited about the project, and we tend to see a lot of potential in a lot of the projects that we get in. So What I'd like to do is kind of walk you through a quick little project and process that's fairly indicative of how we work. Show you a couple quick local examples of some of applicable projects that we've done, and then open it up for some questions. And so this particular one is a project that I was project manager for, and it's for the Grand Canyon. And we'll kind of go through some of these relatively quickly, but this was sort of the final graphic plan that we did of the final project, and this was used for presentations to the public and for marketing from the National Parks standpoint. And if you could go there, or if I can do that?
You can't do that.
I can't do that.
Oh, maybe you can. Oh,
sure enough. Okay, perfect.
Knock yourself out.
Even better.
Makes it way easier.
So that final project started, or that final graphic kind of started with the small area. There's a trailhead area, and there's a little bit of a couple restrooms and a plaza space and a small signage moment. And what that was started from a couple of quick concept sketches and renderings that we did early on to communicate what the site might look like. And so this was sort of at that level, the early design level of kind of what we used to work through the process with the client. And then, as was part of this project, we did a couple perspective renderings and visual aids that were used to help communicate that vision and what the design would look like after it was implemented. And then we also took sort of those initial designs and we worked through some study models. So on the top, that was a three-dimensional rendering with SketchUp and computer software. And then on the bottom, you can see the actual implemented shade structure. And so you can see the graphics that we use to essentially communicate the design and what the end result will look like. And we've found that to be very beneficial to gaining public support and public visualization of what the end result will look like before it's even built. The bottom was a quick sketch they had. Part of the program was a viewpoint over the Grand Canyon. This was a trailhead right up off of Bright Angel Trail. So a lot of the hikers would come up and they would want a photo op of their journey and their trip. And so the bottom was kind of a quick illustrative sketch of what we were initially thinking that could look like. And then the top one is not the best photo, it's a little shaded, but the top one is a photo of the actual trailhead after it was built. And you can see the similarities from the initial sketch to the built work. This one I kind of included this particular project specifically because the artist that did a lot of the stonework, we worked directly with him and local artisans and contractors to really figure out a lot of some of the details to make some of our site detailing very unique and characteristic, sort of create a little bit better moment and memory for the people that use some of our projects and some of our spaces. It's got a little bit of unique identity that you don't see everywhere. Artist that did the engraving and a lot of the masonry work, he's actually the guy in the middle on that top photograph. And so we worked with them to get the lettering and how the signage would fit and the heights so that you could capitalize on sort of that viewpoint. And that's part of something we can offer or tend to do if the project might require it. This was a quick little graphic for something very similar. This was a local project that we worked on with the Homeowners Association down at Sun River, and they also wanted a secondary entry monument or entry signage. And so we came up with a couple little detail graphics and sketches on the top right. The bottom left kind of shows a plan view of how it would all lay out spatially to scale. And then the large image on the bottom right is just a quick visualization of what it would be like as you're driving into Sun River. And this is on their north entrance, so this is their secondary entrance. And it's for that reason, it's a little bit more downstated than their larger main entrance feature. So we took to them two quick concepts to give them two alternatives to review, and then he took this out to a lot of the homeowners to get their input, and sort of a part of the public outreach process for them was to get community and homeowner input on some of these items. And it also gave them a couple different ideas for designs and signage and different ways to look at it and things to compare. So that was another small project. And then this last little bit here, this was a project that we did for a small entry monument. This was actually out for Tethero, so again, another small local project. But it shows the initial design sketch, the layout of it. This was actually for two flanking entry monument signs. And it also goes to show kind of the detail that we would get into through construction documents, which our initial concepts carry through so well and can be implemented so well because of the meticulous detail that we take in the care of our construction documents, working through the details to make sure everything is in place for accurate construction and building of exactly what was planned and exactly, more importantly, what was shown to the community that was to be planned. And that all carries through from the initial design, initial meetings and talkings with the community, down to accurate and complete construction detailing, and then follow through to make sure that that's carried through into construction. This was actually part of a small little packet that I had sent to Corey and put together just to kind of outline some precedent images of other signage that had been done around and what some general cost ranges are as sort of a service for fleshing out the feasibility of this particular project. And this one was kind of part of that. And that's essentially kind of the broad scope of what we do. Our company is Mike and I primarily, and he moved up here about 3 or 4 years ago, started a company and moved up here for family. And then I moved out here almost a year ago now to join with him. He and I had worked together for quite a while before. And we each have about 15 years experience in landscape architecture and have worked on pretty wide breadth of project scales and types and aesthetic design considerations, materials, etc. So, okay. So we'd be excited to lend our knowledge and expertise to their services.
Questions here for you. And since
please.
Sue's been the big push on this thing for probably the last 10 years, so let's start with him.
I'll probably lose it here pretty soon.
We'll do that.
You know, 10 years in the making is a long time. And I want to thank you for finally contacting you and getting someone down here. I like what you have there, but this isn't something, you know, we have a very limited budget. And, sure. You know, our intention when we incorporated was a flagpole and something that says City of Lapine. And it's taken us this long to get to this point. An embarrassment. And I'm going to keep repeating it because this council, actually I'm kind of proud of this council because you're finally getting something done. Thank you. You know, I was afraid I was going to be buried out here before this was done. So your work covers all aspects of the project.
Correct. I think we would typically do all the site planning, any public outreach, or can have the ability to do all site planning, public outreach, and construction detailing, and then we would work with consultants as needed for anything that may come up as a result of that, i.e. electrical work that would be kind of outside of our expertise and or structural calculations that are a little outside our expertise. From larger structural considerations. Smaller things, site walls are within a landscape architect's purview under, I believe it's 4 feet per requirements. But generally speaking, yes.
I'm Stu, sorry to interrupt you, but I should have re-included their proposal in the packet. So if you can recall from memory, I don't know if you have it in front of you, but just, you kind of just did it, but the main categories of, you know, essentially I think what I'm hearing you say is soup to nuts from, you know, working with the council or the community to, you're not going to tell us what it's going to look like. You're going to work with the council and community to figure out what that looks like with
correct.
The budget constraints, et cetera, et cetera.
Correct. I think essentially that process, as you just mentioned, is we'd have meetings. I believe there's a couple meetings, I forget exactly, in here with not only city staff, but there's a public outreach meeting for community input on sort of what they would like to see. And all of this would work within the budget numbers that you have, essentially. Budget numbers that you would have would be relayed to us, and we would use that to guide the process. If something comes up from community members that they would like something more extravagant than the budget would allow, we can, you know, take their advice under consideration, but obviously understand that, you know, we're working with certain constraints and we'll work towards the budget numbers that we have. But we'd come up with a couple concepts that are based on not only staff input, but also community input, and then thirdly, budget numbers and site constraints. And then we'd use those to take back to you and get input on that, and then we would refine that to one sort of final design and plan. And then we would take that plan into construction documents so that it would be ready for bid. And at that point, once we sort of have a final design and plan, we could take it out and see what, if any, other items would be for some reason beyond our scope. Like, say if in the process, hypothetically speaking, it became the desire of you all in the community to include a water feature within that part. I don't think we have that in our scope at the moment. And I know it's probably not going to happen. But hypothetically speaking, we would want to work with a specialized subcontractor to work through all the mechanical and pumping issues for said water feature. But this would be
something simple.
Yeah, absolutely.
Simple. That's all we ever wanted.
Thank you. Don, you have
your... basically, I was wondering if the times that you looked around on the pine, you have sort of in the back of your mind some place to start?
I've got, as Stu kind of just mentioned, something simple and elegant. Simple yet elegant. I think you could work with a sequence of progression as you're coming in and welcoming visitors driving into town from the south. You could kind of work with local materials to give it a little local identity, whether that be something along the lines of basalt or what have you. But the rebranding of the city logo, for instance, was something I think very simple yet very elegant, and got a very nice design to it. And it's simply stated, but it clearly illustrates the city of Lapine. And something design-wise along those lines I think would fit very well for the signage, and bringing in that sequence as you come in. You maybe have your flagpoles, and then you come in and there's a signage, and you are greeted by a little bit of landscaping, and all of that sort of guides the visitor into the city.
Okay, the landscaping is one of the things that you would advise us on too, is that correct?
Absolutely, that's correct.
Fine, thank you.
Well, I like the idea of the rock with the lapine on it, and I like the idea of putting the pine cone there. It'd be great if we could figure out how to work in flag and a flagpole.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
And a seat so that you could sit there. But I don't know what part of the city that could go in other than right over there.
Yep.
So, but I like it.
I was curious. I was able to pull up your proposal, so I was looking at it. And there's, as expected, expected some supplemental services that would be additional charges, but I'm curious what percentage of your contracts typically go over.
What percentage? Very little. To put a pin on it, and it's usually the ones that go over are when expectations change, when something beyond what was originally stated becomes desired. And so I don't foresee that happening here. I think it was very clearly stated as to what was desired. And like from talking with Corey and from Stu's direction, when something very simple and clearly stated yet elegant is a very straightforward design. And but that being said, it's when, typically when, say we work for a homeowner and they're doing their own residential design for their own house. In our experience, homeowners' hearts get very, very tied to exactly what the design is, and they tend to see something that they want. Maybe they were looking on Instagram or the internet and what have you and found a great image. Then their desires and their hearts change beyond what was originally expected. That's typically when you see changes in the design that were unanticipated, extra meetings to kind of vet that out, or working in the cost of whatever that said item may be. And so that's typically where those things come into play. So for the most part, straightforward projects are very linear and rarely cause any additional services. And we typically really strive to limit, if not eliminate, the need for additional services and try to work with our clients very well.
Okay. And my other question was, what sets you apart from the other person we're going to interview?
Well, I don't know the other person you're going to interview.
What sets you apart?
Very
good.
I think it comes primarily down to, as mentioned, Mike and I have got a pretty wide breadth of project experience. We've worked across the country in projects through Wyoming, Colorado, obviously here in Oregon and Arizona, and then down in California as well. So we've worked in a wide variety of project ranges and a wide variety of project types, from the Grand Canyon Trailhead to local signage, and in different styles as well, from sort of a Spanish Renaissance style to more of a rustic, naturalistic, natural resource management to a very contemporary styles. And essentially what that has given us is a lot of experience with a lot of different materials and how to work with them, what makes for ease of constructability. Ease of constructability and clear detailing typically lends to accurate and well-built, easily built projects, which can help keep project budgets in line with expectations. And I would say that experience has us very, very well-rounded. And in particular, I think both Mike and I, he apologized he wasn't able to make it here tonight, but both Mike and I typically like to work with more hardscape detailing. So how you might integrate your flagpole, what your actual signage might be, things of that nature. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. My question is this, I guess it's probably a general question for any of your contractors. Like, once you come up with this design, that's the city's design. We own it?
That's correct. And it's, you own it so far as for the use of this project.
But if we wanted to put similar design on the north end of town, we have a transit center going in,
yep.
Things like that.
Yep.
I mean, we own that design.
Correct.
You might have to come back to you and tweak it.
Right. correct. And we try to make things contextually accurate. So if it were for this particular site, there, as you mentioned, may be tweaks for a different site. But you would essentially own the rights to that design for the purposes of that project. I believe it's a gray area, obviously, if you were to try and sell that design to someone else, because the detailing essentially is proprietary and it's our knowledge. But
someday we might want to put something at the north end.
Yeah, absolutely.
We haven't even started that yet. So.
And I think that would be a great fit, just to have something that sort of bookends ends the town. Absolutely.
Okay, anybody else got anything? Corey, you or Tammy? Anything to add? Well, we appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for coming down. And you know,
absolutely.
We were going to get this going by spring, but it looks like it's going to be a while yet.
Perfect. Well, I look forward to hearing for you, and thank you all again for your time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for making sure that you get a bike bowl in there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Come again?
Do the pointer.
I do.
Final thing I'll say on this agenda item is that we'll be having the other firm down on April 26th at the City Council work session. We weren't able to get both of them on the same day, so we opted to have Brian come down today. Thank you again, and we'll have the other firm down later this month for a similar discussion on their proposal. So,
okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next item is hearing and adoption of Ordinance 2017-1 in accordance amending Ordinance 2012-05 as amended by Ordinance 2015-03 to allow marijuana dispensaries, medical and recreational, and commercial Z-zone, mixed-use commercial zone, and to exclude marijuana dispensaries from the transition areas. And Tammy, you're going to have to explain all of that.
Yes, I will. Ashley's giving a presentation, I think, for us. And that mouthful of an introduction to the ordinance and ordinances, amending the ordinances, we'll be working on in the next year. Right now, that it's worded that way because the zoning ordinance is set up as an ordinance, not as a development code. So every time we may need to make an amendment, is an ordinance. It's a standalone document. So within the next, hopefully, 6 months, when we get some staff time in between projects, we're going to change over to development code, so you have just maybe one sentence to read instead of a long run-on one. So I just want to give you a little background. As a reminder, this is the amendments to these zoning ordinance specifically for dispensaries. This does not address, at this meeting, any other marijuana business. This is a result of the public vote that occurred in November. By December, the county final confirmation of vote was to Corey here at City Hall. And in December and January, the legal team, BLJ, drafted the amendments that are before you tonight. Once they're drafted, we have to notify DLCD, Department of Land Conservation and Development, about what the amendments are. So we send them a copy of the amendments with the notices so they see that we're following proper procedures and they can ask questions if necessary. That 35-day notification put us out to, the earliest we could have a Planning Commission hearing was on February 28th, which we did, called a special Planning Commission hearing to keep it moving forward. And now we're here before you tonight for your final hearing, unless there's any surprises, and a vote on the ordinance that's before you. Just as a reminder of the applicable review criteria, this is what's in your packet. This is what the staff report was written based upon. Those criteria are the procedures ordinance that outlines how we perform the hearings, how we send out the notices, the Lapine Comprehensive Plan, which is what our zoning ordinance is based upon, and then the state planning goals that are in the Oregon Administrative Rules. I will step through some of them briefly, although they're in detail in your packet. Just to remind everybody of what the amendments are, I have a number of slides that outline each of them. This slide points out essentially that the medical marijuana dispensary is being removed and just replaced with marijuana dispensary. As you recall, in 2015, there was a medical marijuana amendment that was voted on and approved and in place in the city. So the point of this amendment is really to make that more broad so that it can be a dispensary, whether it's medical or recreational retail. You can see at the bottom that this does exclude processing, lab certification, or production, because those will be addressed separately. This next slide outlines at the very bottom left, you can see that right now, the way the code is written, medical marijuana dispensaries are allowed in the commercial zone. We've adapted that to allow marijuana dispensary, whether it's medical or recreational, we don't differentiate. And same for the mixed-use commercial zone. We heard from you all at a work session that you felt it appropriate to include marijuana dispensaries in the mixed-use commercial zone, so the legal counsel inserted them there. The transitional areas, I'll show a map shortly. There are a few areas in the city that have an overlay zone called the transitional area. They are largely residential areas at the north and the south end of town. Those were developed, in my understanding from reading some of the past minutes and talking to folks that were involved at that time, those were developed because the Planning Commission at the time felt that those were areas that needed a little extra special attention for large project development. When the legal counsel was reviewing the ordinance from medical marijuana dispensaries, they discovered that it had not been excluded from the transitional areas, simply an oversight. So we've included it here as an amendment to exclude marijuana dispensaries from that transitional area. These are snapshots of the north and south side of town. The hatched areas, microphone in the way, that's the transition area on the north end, and this is a transition area on the south end. Again, those are overlay zones. This is Burgess, and this one's Huntington, to give you some place of where we're located. Right now, this is an old zoning map, so the zones are different, but this now with the new zoning, city zoning, this is residential largely with some public facilities, so it's not like it's a commercial zone or a mixed-use commercial zone. On the south side of town, this is a Finley Butte Park, and we've got a residential zone here abutting the industrial park. Moving on to the next amendment, further clarifying within the special uses section. This is a section within the zoning ordinance that has various opportunities for certain uses in the city to have additional criteria. So there is a special uses section for medical marijuana dispensaries in this section 12, and the amendments amend that to reference all dispensaries. It also includes, as you can see here towards the bottom, a reference to the TPM that was approved by council last year. Further additional amendments to that section 12, talking about the conditions of approval, again referencing TPM. It's all pretty straightforward. Most of it is removing medical, which is making marijuana dispensary, talking about zoning permit and site plan review being required, which is already a requirement of that section. But again, just expanding on it, there's a section here that was previously worded that the approval would be void if any conditional approval is violated, but this amendment gives an opportunity for remedy of that violation. And as a reminder for the process and notices, DLCD was noticed in advance, 35 days required. We did not receive any specific comments or feedback from them. Public notice went out for both public hearings, was in the newspapers for several weeks. Mailings were sent to property owners in the transitional areas in particular. It was on the website and posted around town. Planning Commission hearing was February 28th. They unanimously recommended approval of the proposed amendments for consideration by City Council. And a reminder, those are review criteria. Again, I won't read the staff report in detail, but I will highlight just a couple of sections on it. Largely, a number of the comprehensive plan chapters and state planning goals don't directly apply to these amendments. There are a few that I would note. In the comprehensive plan, chapter 9 addresses the economy. The goals of this chapter relate to strategic planning and land inventories to satisfy urban development needs of the city. While proposed amendments do not specifically relate to these goals, the addition of marijuana dispensaries as an use in certain zones does increase the opportunity in the city for businesses, supporting the overall intent of the chapter. The other chapter I would highlight of the comp plan is Chapter 11, which is focused on energy conservation. And these amendments are not a development, therefore they don't really directly affect energy conservation. However, some of the policies of this chapter are implemented through the zoning ordinance and through site plan review. So any development would go through a future site plan review and be taken into consideration for the energy issues related to that. Conformance with the state administrative rules. I mentioned this involvement already in the noticing, but ample opportunity has been provided through public hearings and noticed quite widely through the city about these. We have not received any negative or opposing comments to this date on these particular amendments. And then finally on, I should say finally for a couple last items. Goal 6, statewide planning goals, is an air, water, and land resources quality goal, basically to maintain those air and water quality goals for the city. Again, similar to energy conservation, any future development under this code would have to go through a site plan, at which point we would review it for water, sewer, stormwater impacts, and transportation requirements. Goal 9 of statewide planning is the economic development again. As you can see, the comp plan and the statewide planning goals mirror each other because the comp plan is based off of the statewide planning goals. So it sounds like reiterating a lot, but economic development in the statewide planning goals, this does improve and increase economic development in the city. And then finally, goal 12, transportation. That goal aims to provide a safe and convenient economic transportation system. Again, these amendments are not development related. However, those developments will be reviewed as they come before the city for any potential traffic developments, development impacts. However, we don't expect these amendments to relate any significant traffic impacts for the city. So in closing, the recommendation from staff is that the proposed amendments do meet comprehensive plan goals, statewide planning goals, and the notice requirements outlined in the procedures ordinance, and recommend approval of the amendments.
Okay, this is a public hearing, so it's considered a public hearing, so the public has a right to... So anyways, the public has a right to speak up, so anybody in the public has anything to say on it, or go ahead, please.
Is it going to be...
Can you come up?
Yeah, you got to come up.
Your name.
Give us your name.
Okay.
Address for the record, please.
I haven't done this for a while.
You should be on already.
My name's Jill Topher, and you want my address, where I live?
Yeah.
Sure, please.
15760 Jack Pine Road. I was just wondering if it does get approved, if it was going to be immediate or however long, how long does it take to go into effect and all that stuff.
Well, this is, we're calling an emergency because we want to get this done, mm-hmm. but I believe there is still a waiting time, isn't it?
There is. Well, and we've conferred with the legal counsel for the city, and they've made it very clear that it is written as an emergency because of the public need for this. There is a 21-day appeal period to the state, to LUPA. That is the state law that we can't affect. So we have to wait the 21 days before we can sign off on any LUX. But at that point, 21 days, if it's adopted tonight, adopted as an emergency, it goes effective immediately, and the 21-day period starts. So 21 days from now, we could sign the LUX for a dispensary.
Okay. That was my question.
Thank you. Anybody else have any comments, anything? Nothing? Okay, at this time then, I'm going to close the public hearing. I'm going to try this one more time, Ashley.
This doesn't work.
Okay. Council. Comments? Connie, start your end.
The only question I had, Tammy, was when we had this at work session, the council wanted to make sure that Wakeup, the zoning was changed in Wakeup, and from what I could see that that was done, like in the Wakeup business area, that that was approved, because the way it was worded previously was that no dispensary could be put there.
I think you're referring to the mixed-use commercial zone, is that?
In the Wakeup
area. Right. Area, yes. Yes, so the comprehensive, the legislative rezone was completed about a year ago, and that did go ahead and adopt quite a few areas of mixed-use zoning. I'd have to look up the exact parcel, but there was definitely a lot of mixed-use zoning in that Wakeup Junction area.
Yes.
That with these amendments, a marijuana dispensary would be allowed within that area if it was commercial, a mixed-use commercial zone. And again, if it's in alignment with the TPM standards and the time, place, and manner standards that were voted on with this, the correct spacing and setbacks.
She made it real simple.
Okay. Don?
I think we beat it to get to death enough. I think we ought to vote on.
Okay. Stu? Yours works.
I'm lying. The city council made the statement and the promise to the people that, we would send this to the voters. Voters spoke. And I don't know, I for one am disappointed in how long it's taken, but that's government, I guess. It just seemed like it went on and on and on, but red tape.
Quicker than this monument sign.
we'll talk after the meeting. So I think we need to, whether you're in favor of it or not, the voters spoke, so we need to act with diligence and get it done as fast as we can. And just get it done, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. For my comments, I think we ought to move ahead fast and furious here, get this done. It's dragged on too long. We got to let these guys open their business. It is a business. We have to acknowledge that, and this is going to have to be a roll call vote, and I'm opening it up for anybody who wants to make a motion.
I move that we adopt ordinance number 2017-01.
Second.
Okay, in favor, Stu, start at your end.
Stu Martinez, aye.
Don Greiner, aye.
Karen Ward, aye.
Connie Breeze, aye.
Okay, a unanimous vote for it, so it's passed. Tammy, Corey, do whatever you have to do to get this thing finalized.
I'll notice DLC either tonight before midnight or tomorrow morning.
Okay, great, wonderful.
Hallelujah.
Okay.
And it starts snowing.
Yeah. Oh, good. Okay, and there'll be a lot more marijuana issues coming up in the future, but the state's still changing their rules all the time. So, they'll just have to work through it, and I hope the public understands we're trying to do our best. Okay, so that's done. On to item 10, now this is just for the council to give Tammy and Corey direction on what this is all about. And Tammy, maybe you can explain this a little bit more. It's a hearing and council direction to staff to draft ordinance for the right-of-way vacation of the western edge of the previous cul-de-sac adjacent to 16673 Apache Tears Court.
Yes.
This is a public hearing, and this will be, unless directed by council, otherwise this will be the only public hearing. So we should have a hearing on it, and Ashley, I think, has a presentation for me on this as well.
Okay.
So Mayor, I'll let you go and open the public hearing, and then I'll start when you're ready.
Okay, this is public hearing open. Staff comments.
Okay. So the applicant is here, and he will be available to give comments and answer questions. This is the map. This is on the south east side of town. You can see Apache Tears Court. off of Wheeler Road. The property owned by the applicant and the property in consideration right now is highlighted in red. It's 16673 Apache Tears Court. As you can see, there's a cul-de-sac located there that, my understanding, when the subdivision was built, it functioned as a cul-de-sac. When the subdivision then was expanded to the south, a through road was placed, making the cul-de-sac not usable. However, right-of-way still being owned by the city. That's a highlighted version of the area that the applicant is requesting a vacation of right-of-way for. And what that means is it's owned right-of-way by the city at this point. The applicant has come to the city and with a petition signed by an abutting neighbor, as well as a notification that was provided to utility companies with the description that this is really not used for the public or for the public good anymore, with a request that it be vacated and the property be provided to this property owner for a private use. The process for this is outlined by state law. A city can either vacate right away from its own fruition or from a petition from an applicant or a property owner. The process outlined by state code addresses specific noticing requirements, noticing to the neighbors, noticing to anybody that may be affected by it, noticing to utility companies, because we want to make sure there's no utilities in that right-of-way, and a posting at the site, so it's visible to anybody driving by. All of those notices were provided in accordance with the state statutes, and no opposition has been received. And in fact, confirmation from utilities companies have been received that there are no utilities in that right-of-way. There's a summary of what I just said. In addition to that, we're having a city council hearing tonight. This needs to occur in two city council meetings. Tonight is intended to be the hearing to hear from any neighbors or anybody affected, as well as the applicant. And to receive comments and then to receive a direction from council if you agree with staff's findings for us to go ahead and draft the ordinance. This has to be via ordinance, and that would include a survey description of the land and the property to be vacated. The other very important piece that I want to note is that many times when a city vacates a right-of-way, it's associated with an exchange of monetary value for what that property is valued at. This applicant has come to the city and said that they are willing to construct the sidewalk and connect the sidewalk. I'll go back to that picture. You can see right now the sidewalk ends at the north end of the property and at the south end of the property. And the applicant has come to the city and said that they are willing to construct that sidewalk for the public good. And staff finds that that is a significant improvement to the neighborhood. We have, it's my understanding that they've come to the city several times over the last several years. And the city has had discussion on, you know, right now it is public right of way. Are there other better uses for it? Could it be some sort of an on-street parking? And we, as staff, Public Works, and engineering, and Corey and I, we've all talked about it and really see that the public value is really in that sidewalk and making that probably, it would be more attractive, I think, with a linear sidewalk and private development behind it. So that summarizes my brief staff report on that. We have done more research and more documentation that we're required to have as part of the state statute on tax liens or anything else that could be associated with that property, and we do not have any documentation. It appears to be free and clear and up to the city to vacate.
Okay. Well, only comment I would add to that is that this has been a process in the coming. I know the applicants, the property owners who want to see this occur, you know, they did share a story with me of several years ago coming to the city trying to get this going. Got a little bit of runaround, never came to fruition, obviously. That's why we're here tonight. And I do want to thank them for their patience over the last 6 months, 9 months. We're not kidding when we say these things take time to sort through, to put in the queue, to write staff reports, to do the research, and to ultimately get to this point, to then have another meeting in May to finalize it. So thank you. And that's it for staff comments.
Okay, yeah, this is a public hearing, so the public, anybody in the public can say something, so. Sure, go ahead, sir. Just have to give your name and address.
Sure. My name is William Cheney, and I own the property that we're discussing at 16673 Apache Tears Court. And I purchased that property back in 2009, when indeed that was a cul-de-sac, and that terminated. And about 2 years later, that road was put through. And so there, one of the main concerns that I have about leaving a cul-de-sac as it is that we've already seen people trying to use that as a parking for large vehicles. There is probably going to be construction occurring just to the south of the property there in that new subdivision. I don't want to see that become an area where people are parking heavy equipment or using it as a, you know, as a place to store things, because essentially right now, I mean, you could park there legally and we couldn't say anything. I am beginning to develop a home site there and plan to start construction this year. And so I think just aesthetically for the neighborhood as well as for the home that I want to put in, it'll be much better just to connect that sidewalk, take out that piece of asphalt that's no longer needed, and just turn that back over to me. It's a very small area of land, but it'll just make it look much neater and nicer for me. And so I won't say any more than that, but if you have any questions, I'd be glad to address them.
Okay, thank you. While he's up here, anybody got any questions for him? Go ahead.
It won't take 10 years, Stu. I could consider that, Stu. I'll get back to you.
I'll call you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Anybody else in the public have anything to say about it? Any comments? Anything at all? Nothing? Okay, at this time then, we're going to close the public hearing. And, you know, we just need direction from the council to move ahead on us. That's all we need.
Yeah, and I would just note that it would be helpful in the motion to have direction to staff to draft the ordinance, but also to work out the agreement details on the sidewalk construction.
So we need an emotion on this. It's called a
right-of-way vacation.
It's an ordinance. Draft an ordinance.
Yeah, so I do have a recommended motion for you to use if you desire on the screen and in the staff report. But you don't have to.
I move for the City Council to direct city staff to draft an ordinance to vacate the western portion of the cul-de-sac on the western side of Apache Tears Court, north of Cabin Lake Lane and adjacent to 16673 Apache Tears Court. In lieu of monetary exchange for the property, Council directs city staff to develop an agreement with the property owners of Apache's, of 16673 Apache Tears Court, for construction of a sidewalk to connect the existing sidewalks at the current extents of the cul-de-sac.
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, passed unanimously.
No ordinance on that one. No. That's just a recommendation. No.
Maybe next time. Next time. Thanks for doing that, Connie.
You're welcome.
Okay, it passed, so move ahead, staff.
Thank you, Tammy.
Corey, while we're on that subject, who owns the other side of the road?
I can look up his name. I know that the property owner has tried to contact him, and to my knowledge was not able to get in contact with him. I believe he lives in California. And didn't receive
response. But basically at some point we'll have to do the same thing.
And we wouldn't have to, but that was the idea. Maybe we could do it at the same time, but we weren't able to get a response from
half a cul-de-sac, no.
It's not worth much.
I get a cul-de-sac.
Okay, enough of that. Pass. Move on. Okay, number 11. Now we're going to get into some contracts. Approval of professional services agreement with Three Rivers Mosquito and Vector Control.
I don't think much needs to be...
Same output as last year.
Jake worked with legal counsel to finalize the agreement. We obviously talked about this at several work sessions, put it out to bid. They were the only bid we received. And yeah, they are the same outfit that provided services over the last at least 2 years,
yeah.
I believe. And Jake's been in contact with the owner of that group in preparation for... the mosquitoes that will be coming at one point or another.
And they're so, here.
Oh, they're already here. Okay. So we're maybe the snow, who knows. But this is the contract back from legal, and there is not an effective date written in there, but would be effective today with authorization from council, approval from council.
Okay, any council have anything, comments on this one before we have a motion? Nothing? This is a 3-year contract, correct?
Right. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, do we have a motion to approve this?
I move that we approve the mosquito abatement service agreement.
Thank you, ma'am.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Approved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Unanimous. We approve the professional service agreement with Three River Mosquito. Okay, move on to number 12. Approval professional service agreement with Little River Design. Corey, go ahead.
I'll let Jake take that one away.
Okay. Landscape maintenance provider for the streetscape projects we've done in La Pine that the city oversees. It's a new contractor. They're a local outfit. I solicited, got 3 quotes from different contractors in the area and decided to go with this contractor. They've already started. I'm pretty happy with the work they're doing, and I look forward to working with them for the rest of this year.
And this is just a 1-year contract?
Correct. And you're more familiar with some of the work. They did the improvements there at the fire hall. That's from one of the most recent projects they've done, so they know what they're doing. They do nice work and really easy to work with.
Hey, does council have any comments on this?
I notice in there it includes a strip in front of Bi-Mart. Just what are they going to do there?
So we have maintenance there. We have a lawn, sod, and treescape there. We've been maintaining that since its existence.
So that's part of the city.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, council. I don't want to speak before council says something.
Yeah, I have no questions until you said they've already started before we've approved the contract. Jake.
That's correct.
Okay.
We're below the mark that we could approve this on our own if we want. We're just making everything, you know.
They did some work at City Hall last week to get started. And then, yeah, while this contract was we were working it out, so.
Karen, anything? Stu, Don, nothing? Do I have a motion to approve this contract?
I'll so move.
A second?
Second.
First and second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Unanimously passed. Okay, I guess since they've done some work, we can start paying them.
That's right.
And I want to say that some of these contracts are below the magic level where they, I mean, and I don't want to, I want the courtesy of you continuing to bring those to us.
Absolutely.
So we know what's going on.
We thought best interest of the city that they start a little earlier than the contract was official.
Okay. The next one we may want to think on a little bit, but if the council wants to go ahead with it, we can go ahead with it. So approval for a professional service agreement with Bryant Lovely, yeah. And Javis Attorney. It's basically Jeremy, our city attorney, that's been with us since day one. Corey, can you give us a little bit more on this?
Yeah, let me shed a little bit of light while let me talk about this. So this has not been on a work session. The Brian Lovin and Jarvis and other folks on the council can speak to this better than I can. They've been with the city, from my understanding, since the beginning. So they have been providing services over that period of time, and they have been in many contracts with the city, contract extensions with the city. When I was talking with USDA for the loans and grants that we're trying to get obligated, hopefully early next month, from the federal government, they wanted copies of every contract we have for essentially professional services. So Tammy's contract for land use, they wanted Eric Huffman for as our engineer of record. They also wanted our legal services contract and our finance services contract. And most people probably know this, the saying of, if you assume, you make in, you and me. So I assumed that the finance contract and the legal contract were up to snuff and current. Went back, reviewed, the legal contract was not, and neither was the finance contract. Now, both both parties had been performing services and agreeing to the previous terms, and there were no issues. So that's the good news. What I wanted to do, though, was to bring them both current and update them. And in conversations with Jeremy and letting him know about that, the only change in this extension to the professional services agreement is that he shared with me that they had been charging the city a rate of $150 an hour for many years, and that subsidized municipal rate is actually lower than their other municipal or other government entity clients. So he said, well, our usual rate is $200 per hour for municipal clients. And I said, well, okay, but let's at least make that a start July 1st so we can budget for it accordingly, if council so wishes, to go that direction. And so that's what is essentially the only change in this document, is extending the contract, and then also saying, it's in section one, it says, however, effective July 1, 2017, attorneys will bill the city at the rate of $200 per hour under section 2.2a. So that's the change. And so again, this is, if council wants to approve this contract tonight, if council wants to table it, discuss it in a work session, or go a different avenue, then they can do that. So.
And I just want to say, I've made such a point in the last few months that we need time to discuss these matters, but it's up to council whether, you know, I don't really know what's there to discuss, but it's up to council whether they want to vote on it tonight or they want to wait. We can wait, right? It is an option.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to stop providing the services that they are right now, but the contract has lapsed, and we should make a decision one way or the other in the next, you know, month, I would say.
So I guess we just need, first of all, recommendation from council if they want to vote on it tonight.
If we don't vote on it tonight and we send it to a work session, that means it will be a month before the contract is approved, because that, and then you would have to send it in after that time. Is that correct?
If we put this on the April 26th agenda, the soonest we could bring it back for a regular session would be May 10th. Yeah, that's correct.
Any comments from anybody else?
I don't see any problem with approving it tonight. I think that the rate increase is probably expected, and not only that, if you hire a different attorney, it would take him more time to try and figure it out, and it would end up costing us more money in the long run. So Jeremy's well versed in the city of Lapine and as well as other small cities in the area, so I'm in favor of approving it tonight.
Okay, let's have a motion then. Somebody want to make a motion to approve?
I move we approve the extension of the attorney's agreement.
I'll second.
First and seconded, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Passed unanimously. Jeremy now makes $200 an hour, so let's not call him quite so much.
July 1st.
July 1st.
We can call him all we want.
Okay, get all the phone calls in before July 1st.
And bill the USDA for the difference.
Yeah, right. Of course. Absolutely. Okay, and that's it. There's no other matters. Public comments? You're allowed, Gary, if you want.
Could I make one?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. I got Gary running scared now, I think. I don't know.
I'm shy.
Gary Gordon. We're pleased to have posted online the comprehensive plan update for the Lapine Park and Recreation District. It's at lapineparks.org. It's a 121-page document. I've been handing out printed copies. We're going to be having some public input in the next few weeks. It's put in the Wise Buys. You can see the ad in there, and all comments and so forth will be welcome. It's just another step in getting the public input and buy-in, and it's a major project. It's taken a year to draft it up, and we're moving along down the line. And we hope, Mr. Mayor, that after we continue to get that input, we could set up a work session with the city council to kind of go over it. Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you.
Do you have the dates and times offhand real quick?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, I'll chat with you after offline, after the meeting.
Any other public comments? Anybody, anything to say? Nothing? Okay, let's go to staff comments.
First, we're having interviews Friday afternoon, all Friday afternoon, for the open administrative assistant position. Those will take place between 12 and 5. We had 17 applicants, and we've narrowed it down to 5 that we will interview. The plan is still to have that person on board, hopefully by May 1st or around May 1st, and we're pretty much on track for that. So that's an update there. Appreciate it. A few counselors volunteering to participate and help advise myself and Jake during that process. I've got packets for you after the meeting. I'll give them to you. April 25th, there's going to be an event at the Senior Center at 6 p.m. It is put on by essentially the folks, the various community folks who have participated in economic vitality studies and action teams over several years in Lapine. And so they'll be there facilitating, and then myself and I know Dennis as well will be there to talk a bit about how the city is picking up and carrying the torch of improvements here in Lapine, whether it's beautification, public improvements, business vitality, etc., etc. So just wanted to put that on the calendars. And that, I think, is about it. We'll have a busy work session at the end of the month, and then the week after that, we'll have budget committee meetings, May 3rd and May 4th, and possibly May 5th, depending on if we need to have a third meeting. So the staff's goal, am I wrong on anything, Ashley? What am I wrong on? 4th, 5th, and 6th?
Second,
3rd, sorry. May 2nd, Tuesday, May 3rd, Wednesday, and May 4th, Thursday. Staff's goal is to have the proposed budget ready for council and the budget committee on April 28th, which is that Friday. Did I get that right? Got that right. So we're working, that's T-minus, 16 days. So we're working to put that together. Staff's been working hard on that, and I appreciate everyone's input on that. And looking forward to it. And that's all the comments I have, unless other staff has any.
First Street improvement projects, pedestrian improvements, and streetscape has kicked off officially this week. You notice sidewalks are getting tore out near the medical center. That's Nick Russell Construction starting their project, and they'll be doing that and landscaping the swale on 97. We've installed a bench and garbage can on First Street already. We're looking to install the second. Would have installed already, but we are considering snow removal after this last winter. That it's a little easier to plow sidewalks if the benches aren't directly on the sidewalk. So we're accommodating that. We're going to pour a slab for another set of bench and garbage can. Did some work with ODOT a couple weeks ago to pothole utilities along the highway for their West Side streetscape project they're going to do. That'll probably kick off within this year. We'll see that starting. Yeah, but a lot of stuff going on right now. And this snow doesn't help.
Yeah. Never stops. Ashley, tell us something.
I don't have anything.
Okay. Council comments? Stu, you're up.
How much time do we have?
All the time you want to take.
Flagpoles. Seriously. Let's see, SLED, Economic Development, as the council is aware, our person for that resigned, and they're working on filling that position. They're, I believe the announcement's already out.
Yeah, the job opening, it's already open, and then I was hoping to get a more thorough update from Roger Lee, the executive director, yesterday. The meeting was yesterday, but he wasn't able to attend. I'll see him later this month or talk to him prior to then and get a clearer sense on that timeline. But Steve Parnell, who's resigning, who's the person in that position right now, he's staying on until May 15th. I believe the goal is for them to have someone hired by then or soon after, so there is not much of a gap like there was prior to Janet Burton's resignation and hiring Steve after New Year. So, yeah, that's a good update.
And stay tuned for the pub talk that may be coming to our neck of the woods. Discussion on that. Attended the Lapine Chamber Award Banquet this past weekend. Fun time. I believe next week is the Park and Rec dinner, and I believe tickets are still available, so if any counselor would like to attend that, that is also a good event.
I think that's the very end of the 28th.
28th, okay.
Yeah, so it's a week from Friday. Friday. Two weeks from Friday.
I think that's all I got. Thank you.
Okay, Don.
All I want to say is when I'm coming into town, I see stoplights in front of me, because that speed sign, when they come close and they see that, you see the stoplights coming on and those cars slowing down. Thank goodness that you use it, because it helps.
Really. Karen.
Well, I have to tell you that tonight I felt like a great big boulder was lifted right off my shoulders. We have been working on this marijuana thing forever, and the people told us where they wanted us to go. So I'm very proud of us that all of us voted yes. The other thing is that I would love to see the new housing come here. But I do have one little concern, and that is the snow that we've had this year. I know the area that they're talking about putting that in, and I can tell you that cars are going to have a problem back in there. But that being said, we need to do something about housing. So it was a good meeting. It was very cram-packed. But I think we got through it, and I was glad that we kept our attorney. He has been with us for a long time, from the very beginning. I remember the young man that came to the first meeting that we had when we first became a city, and that man stayed with us every night for about 2.5 years. So he deserves to stay with us. Thank you.
Great meeting. I think we accomplished quite a bit. It's a lot on the agenda, but I just wanted to give an update. I went to COIC meeting on, it's a busy time for me. Thursday, I guess, the last week is when I went. Not a ton of updates, but they are working on pushing through House Bill 2745, which is to basically give us local, control for transit. And they did run into one snag with that if they approve a, if they try to approve a tax for a taxing district, it'll have to be done three countywide. So Kirk, Jefferson, and Deschutes would all have to approve, the majority of the voters would all have to approve the maximum tax, but then each separate area can then approve what they would implement, if anything at all, when they're ready. So it still leaves local control, but overall the vote will have to go to three counties. So it changed that part a little bit, but ultimately it's just the maximum amount that they would go for a transit district. And the concern with the legislators about moving that forward was solely with accountability. They wanted to make sure that COIC had plenty of accountability measures in place to make sure that they were following what each area wanted to do with local control, and not what COIC or their board wanted to do. And so they want to implement.
I'm not sure what you said.
I guess she's not sure.
I guess I'm not clear.
Is that music in the background?
Somebody's phone over there. So, I don't know what I said now either. Ultimately, the COIC wants to make sure that, or the legislature wants to make sure that COIC is accountable. And each area that wants to move forward with any kind of transit would then create a board that would give them direction. So it will still, ultimately, their goal of keeping it local control will still happen, of course, if it's even approved. In the meantime, COIC is moving forward with their, just as business as usual, because it's probably going to be several years down the road before anything like that happens. So, just a quick update. That's all I got.
Okay. I've been to COCO, COAC meetings, you know, Central City meetings, and everything's all about the state budget. I mean, nothing's being settled. We may not see a state budget for quite some time, so everybody's up in the air on all their projects. You know, it's, you go over there, it's a standstill. Like, bunch of little kids battling against each other. That's how I said it. Okay, for anyways, I appreciate these guys every time you come down here. They're working on the budget, which is a good thing. SLED moving ahead. I will say I went to an open house yesterday over the Friendly Butte, and if you remember last fall, there were some doubters because we gave the park and rec some water, you know, to do the ball fields out there. But if you go out there now, there's green grass on all three ball fields. They have a tournament coming up. The building, I don't know the name of the building out there.
It's basically a community.
Yeah, it's like a community. The inside, it looks brand new. So I guess the doubters, oh, park and rec, apology for doubting them, but we aren't going to phrase you too much until the next project.
I know.
So that's just wonderful. They got a tournament scheduled. It's looking really sharp out there. I stopped by the fire department the other day, talked to Mike, and of course, if anybody knows Mike in the future, with the past where he's upset over water, they're using their own well to water their swale they put in. And they're going to do more landscaping, so that's a big plus for the city. And I mean, the city's just moving ahead big time. And that's all I have to say. I'll look for a motion to close this meeting.
I so move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting adjourned.